Welcome back to the Crash Course Podcast. My name is Craig Crash Collins, joined as always by Brandon Scott, otherwise known as B Scott. We've got a lot to get into. We're going to revisit Wild Card Weekend. The first weekend of the NFL playoffs is over. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about the divisional round, give you a preview of what to expect this weekend. It's going to be wild. We're also going to throw some Pacers in there as well, because it is about the halfway point of the season, a little bit past the halfway point, and a month before the trade deadline. So we wanted to revisit the Indiana Pacers. We haven't really talked much about them since the start of the season. Not that they've really been doing anything noteworthy for us to talk about them. But before we get into it, B. Scott, how was your weekend, man?
You know, it was a good weekend. Things are starting to really ramp up at work and keeping the sports world moving. This is what we do.
Yeah, it was a fun weekend of football. Watched a lot of football this weekend. Of course, if you're on twitch.tv/CraigCrash, stream some video games, got back into that a little bit. So it was just a fun, relaxing weekend. And hey, like I said, got to kick back and watch some football. But before we get into the wild card weekend discussion, and then the divisional round preview, we want to, like I said, talk a little bit about the Pacers. They struggling right now, to say the least. 15-29, they're 13th in the Eastern Conference. They've lost 10 of their last 11. They're 3-13 over their last 16 games. TJ Warren is still out. TJ McConnell is out. Malcolm Brogdon re-aggravated his Achilles in Boston last week. He previously missed 9 games. Miles Turner announced today that has a foot injury. He's going to be reevaluated in 2 weeks, which means he will not be evaluated in time for the trade deadline. Or I think actually like a week before he's going to be ready. Like he's going to be evaluated, but we'll see.
Evaluate him.
Yeah.
You better believe it.
And then you also have Jeremy Lamb, who is day to day. Now, of course, you know what, you know, you mentioned it, you know, they're going to reevaluate Turner because his trade rumors are swirling. Domas Sabonis has been rumored to want out of Indy. Those rumors are
Turner.
Right. So, well, I mean, honestly, it was only a matter. I was going to say, well, it's only a matter of time, if for no better reason than the fact that he's been in trade rumors for the last like 3 years, it seems like. So yeah. It seems like every single year it's Miles Turner, there's a lot of suitors. Trade rumors swirling. Now, the one bright spot, you know, we were a little bit wrong. We said there was nothing noteworthy going on with the Pacers. The most noteworthy thing that we can get into is good old Lance, make him dance. Lance Stephenson, 20 points in his home debut versus the Nets, 16 points, 4 assists versus Utah. Although since going back to the bench, 11.6 assists, 5 rebounds over the last 2 games. That does not count anything that he did against the Clippers, because the outline was made before the Clippers game. The Indiana Pacers are just not in a great state right now. It just makes you think, what about the future of the Indiana Pacers? Where do we go from here? Because we talked about it in our preview. It seems like we've been doing kind of the same Pacers conversation over and over for the past few years on this podcast, when we're saying, hey, once everybody's healthy, we'll see what this team is. Or it's, hey, you know what, once this team hits their stride, next year's the year. They really, finally got it together this year, and we'll see next year. And it just really hasn't happened. It's really not come. And you bring in, Rick Carlisle this offseason, and the thing that was talked about a lot in the press conference and a lot, when the hire was made, is that he and Kevin Pritchard talked about winning now when Carlisle was hired over the summer.
That's a common theme amongst front offices of sports organizations in Indianapolis.
Yeah.
We're going to win now. It's all about winning championships. Well, how about you first get in the playoffs?
Yeah, how about we win a playoff series since the era of Paul George and Roy Hibbert and David West and all those guys. I wanted to look back and I wanted to be like, what was it? Like, when, for Rick Carlisle, has he ever been in a situation where he's had to rebuild a team or been through a rebuild pre-championship. Because, of course, after winning in Dallas, it was just kind of whatever after that championship once a lot of those guys retired. But you had already won your championship, so you're kind of just still invested in that team because you've already won your championship with them. Not saying you don't want to win more, but you're not as antsy to try to win now with that team because you've already won. So his first stint with the Pacers from 2003 to 2007, he had been an assistant on Larry Bird's staff when the Pacers went to the finals. Carlisle went 61-21 in his first season with the Pacers. His next season was, of course, the Malice in the Palace year, in which the Pacers were thought to be a title contender. Carlisle was out three seasons later. He took over the Dallas Mavericks in 2008, which was oozing with veteran talent. They had Dirk, they had Jason Kidd, they had Eric Dampier, they had Jason Terry, all with nine or more seasons of experience. They added Sean Marion the next season, not saying that that was like the big piece that got them the title, but just another veteran in that lineup. And they wound up beating the Heat for the NBA title. Maybe the last win or one of the last championships for a team to kind of do it the old way with veteran leadership and a whole team effort, not just mostly just, you know, a band of two or three players that were your main source of any sort of production. And then he made the playoffs six more times with the Mavericks, never winning a series never winning another series. The point is, Rick Carlisle is used to coming into a contending situation. And you thought at the very least he was coming into a situation with a team that was, you know, kind of on the verge of making the playoffs. The Pacers were a mess last season. They got into the play-in tournament, and they wound up not making the actual postseason. And so you thought, hey, I mean, I know we thought on the show, earlier this season, I don't think either of us picked them in the playoffs, or if we did, they were in the play-in tournament. Mm-hmm. But I also think that we were like, well, it's because of the injuries and our whole spiel that we mentioned at the beginning of this segment. You look at this roster. And, I mean, these are the facts with the roster the way it stands right now. Malcolm Brogdon is under contract for 22-plus mil a year through 2025. You're probably stuck with him. And, I mean, he's a good player. I enjoy Brogdon. I think he's a good piece to have. I'm not, antsy to get rid of him, but I don't think you have a choice but to stick with him unless you want to.
Oh, yeah. And also, you can't really put him wanting to nurse and make sure he doesn't aggravate an Achilles injury because – one, those are painful.
Yep.
Anytime I've had issues with an Achilles before, and it is not fun. And, the season, this is a lost season at this point. So why rush him back from something that could put him out even more of an extended period of time in the next year? But yeah, I mean, it's going to be tough moving him, one, because of that contract, and two, because of the Achilles issue he's got going on right now. But hey, if you do think you're going to eventually move him, the offseason could be a good point, or even the trade deadline next year. I'm not sure how many more years he has left on his contract. Eight
through 2025. So he has the rest, I think, like another three seasons after this one.
Okay. But defensively, he is good. I mean,
yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot of other tradable pieces on this roster.
I'm good doing whatever they want to do with him. If they want to keep him, great. If they want to trade him, great. I am honestly toward the side of keeping him, but I don't know if that's more like, hey, I feel like we're stuck with him, so I'm good with having him because he's not too bad. But at the same time,
Here's a what if with him. If Philadelphia calls the Pacers and say, hey, we'll give you Ben Simmons for Malcolm Brogdon, Caris LeVert, and Miles Turner.
I say no.
Jump on that? Yeah, I say no. Yeah, Ben Simmons can play good defense, but man, he can't shoot the ball in the case.
Yeah, he also doesn't win very many playoff series. Now, looking over at Sabonis, he's also under contract until 2024. Rumors are that he wants out. I'm thinking maybe you could trade him to a team whose window is currently opening, just getting started. The team that came to my mind was the Bulls.
Who are going to trade him inside? I mean, I know it doesn't make any difference.
Division. I don't think that matters. I literally don't think that's even like a thought. You know what I mean? It's not as if winning. I don't even know what divisions are called, to be honest. I don't like, you can't tell me Yeah, you can't tell me winning the Central is, you know, because it doesn't. It literally has no impact on whether or not
you... It is important to the Pacers. If you look up in the rafters, they have Central Division winner banners hanging up there.
That's true.
But I guess if you want to celebrate that as the Pacers, because for the longest time, that division was controlled by Michael Jordan, the Chicago Bulls.
True.
And then it was the Detroit Pistons and with, you know, Ben Wallace and Richard Hamilton. Then it was the Cleveland Cavaliers with LeBron James. I mean, if you want to celebrate that, you celebrate that.
Yeah. Not quite the same as the AFC Finals banner.
I hate that one.
But you know, it's one of those things with the you know, make fun of it, you know, when Patriots fans make fun of the Colts, I generally get mad, but when they make fun of the finalist banner, I'm like, okay, we kind of deserve that one. Like that one is deserved. So yeah, like I don't want to trade Sabonis, but I think your best chance to move him is with the team. Like, you could, especially his value. One, he's one of the, you know, better assets on the team, if not the best asset. And you can, you know, I think that contract will be easier to move because he's still playing well. And you can, you know, sell it to a team that, like I said, their window is starting to open. The Bulls right now have quite a bit of injuries as well, so that could be another selling point. You know, trading him to the Chicago Bulls. But I mean, I'm sure there's other teams that you could possibly trade him to that are also, you know, consider their windows open. But at the same, but that's
Blazers.
Yeah, Blazers was the one that came to mind. The Heat, I mean, their windows just kind of usually just open anyway. But you know, you could that's another team that could potentially use a player like Sabonis. So there's quite a few teams that could definitely take him. You know, originally when I, you know, wrote this out, I had trade Miles Turner. That may or may not happen. Honestly, if it doesn't happen before, doesn't happen before the start of next season, he's under contract for another year, for only one more year anyway. So you might as well just keep him and see what happens and go from there. Because that's how dire the situation is. We've been hearing Miles Turner trade rumors for 2 or 3 years, and he is literally, like, if it goes on another 2 years, he's literally going to be gone, and we got nothing for him. And I'm not saying that I wanted to trade him in the beginning, you know, anyway. I always was like, well, because it almost seems like as soon as he got drafted, he was in trade rumors. So, like, I've never been one of those big, like, I've never really banged the drum of we need to get rid of Miles Turner. But if you're going to, your window is closing because he's literally going to be gone. And then as tough as it is to say, I think you got to let Warren and Lamb walk after the season. You don't know what you're getting back when they come back from their injuries, especially Lamb. TJ Warren, at least there's a little bit more of a case for, but I still think just with as much time as he's missed, you just kind of, because you, like I said, you don't know what you're getting, or you can, there's a chance you can get him back on the cheap because he will want to have
he'll
prove it year.
He's been out for 2 years at
right.
that point.
He hasn't really played since the bubble, right?
Right.
Yeah. So, so basically to wrap things up on, you know, or at least what, you know, my thought on it, trade Sabonis and Turner whenever you can. Let Warren and Lamb, those contracts expire. That would mean the payroll would dip below 100 mil. You could focus on acquiring draft capital. And I think that core of Brogdon, LeVert, and Duarte could be sufficient to try to build another, and try to, another contender and try to eye the postseason in 2022, 2023. That's my thought, because the thing is that, like, it's not really Carlisle's fault if he thought he was coming into a winner and it's literally a dumpster fire. But at the same time, the NBA is, just like sports in general, is a business. So, like, you're not going to, if they offer him a contract, I don't know that he necessarily says no, but he may explore other options. If, I came to the Pacers, I did what I could, but there's probably another team that maybe their window is more open than the Pacers is, and he may jump ship because the Pacers don't really, have a course right now.
Hey, they can always trade head coaches. I mean, you can always send Rick Carlisle to the Lakers, who are currently unhappy with Frank Vogel, and he's bound to be fired any day because, well, they have an old, old, broken team. Hate to say it to all you LeBron lovers out there, but he's old, he's broken, and he's not the player he once was anymore, folks. But anyways, with the Pacers, look, I know we talked about, hey, there was rumors that Sabonis wants out. He refuted those rumors. He said, I'm not saying that. That's not me. But then on the flip, Miles Turner is now saying that he wants out because he wants to be a center focused piece, like not his position, but he wants to be, you know, have more of a focus on him rather than being second fiddle to somebody else like Domas Sabonis. So honestly, I think when you look at this roster, the players that are really being considered to be traded at this point in order would be Miles Turner, Caris LeVert, and then Domas Sabonis. I honestly think Sabonis stays. I don't think the Pacers are going to let him walk or be let go of him. Yeah, there are some teams out there that would like him and everything, but I just don't think the return you're going to get for Sabonis is as high as it is for Miles Turner. Sabonis is right. A more of a grinded out in the middle, under the basket type center, whereas Miles Turner is a stretch. You know, he can hit the three. I mean, I think he's shooting like 36% from three this year, which is an impressive number for somebody that's 7 foot. So because of his rim protecting ability and his ability to stretch the floor, Miles Turner carries a much higher value than Sabonis, even though Sabonis is a two-time All-Star. But take that for what it's worth in the NBA. I mean, the guys leading the vote right now have barely played this year, and they're all injured, and guys that are playing like All-Stars are being left out because, let's just be honest, it's just a popularity contest. It doesn't matter who plays well. Carmelo Anthony is leading the All-Star voting. Like, come on, just stop. That's silly. But anyways, And the other player, Caris LeVert, there's a lot of people that are interested in Caris LeVert. One of the names that teams that pops up frequently for him is actually the Cleveland Cavaliers. They're looking to unload potentially Colin Sexton, which, you know, could be a good shot in the arm for the Pacers. I think he's on an expiring rookie deal anyways, so it wouldn't be that big of a deal. There are some teams that are wanting the Pacers to package Turner and LeVert, and then in turn the Pacers probably could get their maximum value out of a package like that, because right now the Pacers are asking for multiple firsts and a good young player or just a couple firsts and a good young player as well. So that is something that is a possibility that if you know, some teams are saying, hey, we'll do that, and we'll throw in some contract filler here if you throw LeVert in as well. One of the teams that is popping up for that, actually there's a lot of teams popping up for that one, but like Charlotte is a team that's really interested in Miles Turner. One team that is officially backed out on Miles Turner in their interest is the Dallas Mavericks. They were looking to bring him in, but prior to the foot injury is when they backed out of that. So that one, that's off the table, but there's a lot of interest and a lot. I feel like now there is, like, with this rumor, if there's smoke, there's definitely fire. I feel like the Pacers will be moving Miles Turner, and honestly, regardless of what the outcome is right now, even if they don't reevaluate him with his foot, I mean, they're probably going to hold him out regardless because they know they're going to move him. And another name that wouldn't be surprised to see moved as well, Goga Batadze. He's a name that's been popping up as well. Teams are interested in him because of the upside that he has. And the Pacers just don't seem to have any plans for him at this point. The Pacers just don't seem to have any plans whatsoever.
Just period. Yeah, they don't.
To be honest, moving forward, I kind of from rumors that you're hearing out there occasionally, are that the Pacers are potentially looking at moving Rick Carlisle into the front office and off the bench, which could have been one of the reasons he came back to the Pacers, is something that they talked about originally, and Kevin Pritchard kind of stepping aside. A very similar situation to kind of what you saw in Boston with Brad Stevens leaving the bench and going up to the front office. So that's something to keep an eye on as well with this Pacers team. But to be honest, I think there's only a few players that are off limits. I don't think Caris LeVert, or not Caris LeVert, he's definitely in the trade talks. Chris Duarte. I think Chris Duarte is one of the players that you definitely don't put out there. I think out of anybody else on that team is touchable. They need to make some of these moves. I think I could see a player like a Jeremy Lamb being included in some of these as contract filler, or, you know, as a, to a team that needs a little bit more bench depth as they get closer to the playoffs. They're not really needing him now, but as they, as playoff time rolls around, having a shooter be able to come off the bench just for a few minutes a game, he fills that need perfectly for a contender. So I think in order, the players that are most likely to get traded, Miles Turner, Caris LeVert, Jeremy Lamb, and then Jeremy Lamb, Goga Batadze, and then Domas Sabonis. I mean, if they trade Domas, I wouldn't be surprised. But at the same time, I would be more surprised if they traded him and kept Miles Turner.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, bottom line is they just need to start unloading talent. They need to start unloading talent and getting – and I mean, I think Duarte, they're going to hold on to him as long as possible, because when you have a team with the track record of developing talent as the Warriors being upset that they didn't get him, that means that you're on the right track.
Remember, we were all about Moses Moody in the draft. A lot of people.
Oh, yeah.
So one of the biggest rumors out there is that the Golden State Warriors are ready to throw the kitchen sink at the Pacers from at least Miles Turner and potentially Caris LeVert or Jeremy Lamb. And they are looking at sending some first round picks, or I think like one or two first round picks, or maybe just one. They're also looking at sending, like, in the rumored packages and everything that are out there, it's like James Wiseman, you know, the number one pick, James Wiseman, Moses Moody, and Jonathan Kuminga. I'm like, if that package is real, you jump at that one. Cause that is a package that jump starts you in a very good way. I think, like, even the first round pick, it's not that big of a deal because it's got like a top 10 protection, but let's be honest, are the Golden State Warriors picking in the top 10 this next year?
No,
they're not. If they do, that means the wheels completely fell off their bus and Steph Curry blew out his knee and, you know, everything is falling apart. So I think if a package like that comes across the table, I think the Pacers have to jump at it. And if it comes out after the trade deadline that they passed up on something like that, then it's like, I think it's time for Pacers fans to just say, you know what, if the front office isn't going to take this team seriously and put us in a position to, you know, look decent, why are we going to bother? Why right. even bother with this team? Why am I going to go spend my hard earned money and sit at it's beautiful, Gainbridge Fieldhouse, but why am I going to go waste my time and money at watching a team that, you know, just can't put it together, and then run by a front office that just doesn't care?
Yeah.
You know, that's what it's going to end up coming to.
Yeah.
And there's always been that talk of, well, the Simons would like to really, if they sell the team's going to move. I mean, at this point, bye. I mean, seriously. Like I was telling you off air, this stat's really interesting. Since 1990, the Pacers are the only team in the NBA to not have had a single digit pick, meaning pick 1 through 9, since 1990. The only team in the NBA. Which typically would point towards signs that, oh, you're really good. Well, yeah, there was a period of time there in the mid-late 90s that they were really good, early 2000s, and then again a few years later. But most of it's because the Pacers are not bad enough to get a single-digit pick, but not good enough to win a championship or really make any noise in the playoffs. And right. I mean, it's just, it's getting old, and I think it's time for the fans to speak up, to be honest, because we're just kind of all like brainwashed into thinking it's okay to be mediocre. That's just what we do here in Indianapolis. You know, we have a football team that, you know, an owner that talks about winning multiple championships, and then we either don't make the playoffs or we get bounced in the first round, but it's okay because we made the playoffs. Same thing goes with the Pacers. It's okay. We made the playoffs, but we didn't do anything with it.
Yeah.
That's what we are. We're a small market team.
Yeah. It's like,
you know, we can't boohoo, poor us. We can't land any big names because we're a small market team. We're not willing to spend any money, or we're not willing to tank to rebuild. We're just kind of, exist.
Meanwhile, the NBA Finals was literally two small market teams this past year, and they could literally just, you know, to even use that as a model and stuff like that. It's that small market model.
The ownership of the Pacers, honestly, is what's holding them back.
Yeah.
It's the Simons. The Simons don't want to lose money. They want to make money, but they're not really, it's just kind of, they're stuck in neutral. Mm-hmm. And for the Simons, that's fine. You know, they don't really care. Their fans are still showing up to games. So guess what? That's still making them money. They're not losing money because they're not having to spend anything on big name players. And
right.
God forbid they go anywhere near the tax threshold. So.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's not good. And, you know, we'll wrap it up there, but yeah, they just don't really make any effort to bring any sort of talent to the table. And the thing is that when the Pacers have had their successes, you know, their runs, you know, with Reggie Miller, with Paul George, and then with Victor Oladipo, I mean, I know they didn't draft Oladipo, but they did draft Reggie Miller and Paul George. Not only are those three like kind of faces of those time periods of Pacers history progressively worse as far as like Hall of Famer to Victor Oladipo, but also like it's just you were very lucky to be able to draft a guy like Reggie Miller. You were good to be able to draft a guy like Paul George. Now you have to actually, you know, if you don't feel, and maybe they have somebody like that in Chris Duarte, that's obviously a big, you know, big ask in year one, but you have to do something with it. I mean, you have to be willing to be like, all right, you know what? We've been lucky enough to have some of these good picks. Now we want to surround them with, you know, grade A talent. And that's just not what they've been willing to do.
No. And honestly, they haven't really done much, even with the draft, outside of the years Donnie Walsh was in charge of picking players. I mean, Kevin Pritchard did hit a home run, in my opinion, with Chris Duarte. I'm not going to lie there. I guess the verdict's still kind of out on that one, but the early returns look good.
Yeah.
But really, if you think about it, Donnie Walsh was a mastermind of building a team, especially through the draft, and then picking up. He didn't have to go out and sign big name all-stars. He had to keep them at that time. Like Mark Jackson. And I mean, he was able to lose Mark Jackson. He brought Mark Jackson in actually via free agency. So that was a big deal. But like and he made smart trades. I mean, look at the trade that brought in Jalen Rose. And there was a trade, I think, wasn't it Jalen Rose that was a part of that one?
I think so.
Later where Ron Artest was brought in, and they brought Brad Miller. It was like a big trade they made with the Bulls, I think.
But, yeah. See, I mean,
there was
they traded with the Bulls in the division. It's happened before.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's just, I don't know. I want to see them succeed because I have so many fond memories growing up of watching Reggie Miller and the Pacers and how good they were. And now it's just like, well, one, you can't even watch them on this new great network, Bally Indiana or whatever, Bally Network.
Yeah.
It never works. And, you know, nobody can watch the Pacers right now. So would any free agent want to come here when not even people in Indiana can watch the Indiana Pacers? It's
right.
Bad. So yeah, you're going to start losing fan interest big time if you don't do anything to make it look like you're trying. And if you don't figure out this broadcast thing.
Well, that's where we'll wrap it up with the Pacers. But yeah, hopefully, basically the key point there is the Pacers need to just do something. They need to get the ball rolling and get some sort of direction. The direction we're going to take the podcast, though, is to a point where we're going to recognize and thank our friends of the show.
Are you tired of your same old lunch hour of sitting and scrolling through your apps on your smartphone? Have you thought about playing a board game with your coworkers? Eat Lunch and Board Game is a podcast dedicated to telling you about board games that are great for lunchtime fun and some that are probably better saved for after work hours. I've been playing games at my office for over 4 years now where I have made new friends and business connections that have been very useful. Board games build bridges.
And remember that you can follow us on Facebook, 3C Media. You can follow us on Twitter at 3C Media Sports. You can go to our YouTube and our TikTok, 3C Media over there, where we've got a lot of cool videos, a lot of, individual content over there as well. Not just the podcast. You can watch just the standalone videos as well. So that's a lot of fun. If you want to watch us live, if you want to interact with us, twitch.tv/CraigCrash. We've had some people in the chat already today. Meg's here. L is here. Carter's is here. He's talking about how the trade that the Warriors are shopping with the Pacers sounds like when the Vikings wanted Herschel Walker. That's very true. Where they're trying to throw the kitchen sink at the Indiana Pacers. So if you want to come interact with us, twitch.tv/CraigCrash. You can listen every week on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, wherever podcasts can be heard. You can hear the Crash Course podcast. So, we had wild card weekend this past weekend. First round of the NFL playoffs. It all got started on Saturday with the Bengals and Raiders. The Bengals win 26-19. You can send a text finally in the same weekend that the Bengals won a playoff game. The Bengals sealed their first playoff win since 1991 on an interception. Joe Burrow, 24-34 with 244 yards and 2 touchdowns. Jamar Chase, 9 catches and 116 yards. And also, are we all in agreement that was going to be a touchdown on that blown whistle? Have you seen that, B. Scott?
Oh, yeah.
It was. So I don't know what all the hullabaloo was with that, but I was like, yeah, that was definitely going to be a touchdown. What an incredible throw by Burrow going out of bounds and finding Boyd in the back of the end zone. So yeah, they were definitely already in good shape there. Another team in good shape were the Buffalo Bills. Round of applause for them. For doing what the Colts could never do, and that is blow out the Patriots in the playoffs. 47-17, Bills win that one. Josh Allen goes 21-25, 308 yards and 5 touchdowns. 7 drives, 7 touchdowns for the Buffalo Bills. Just an insane performance. On Sunday, it's Carter's earmuffs because we're going to be talking about the Cowboys soon. But the first game was the Buccaneers and Eagles. The Bucs win 31-15. Tom Brady goes 29-37 with 271 yards and 2 touchdowns. Mike Evans, 9 catches for 117 yards and a touchdown. The Bucs pick off Jalen Hurts twice. And then the 49ers and Cowboys were the afternoon game. The 49ers rush for 169 yards and 2 touchdowns. The Cowboys were driving at the end but can't get another playoff after Dak rushes for first down. Really head scratching play call for the quarterback sneak there.
Yeah, but you know what? I love what Tony Dungy said today. He put out on Twitter. He said, "Let's not focus on that last second play call. Let's not, because there was so many other things that need to be looked at, like the fact you only rushed for 77 yards, the fact you gave up 167 yards rushing. It was like a whole list of things. It's like." But yet all the Dallas fans are like, well, if we wouldn't have run up the middle with a few seconds left, we could have done something. Like, no, you couldn't have done – you didn't do anything all game. What makes you think that a few extra seconds was going to really change the course of that game?
Right. Also, Dak not knowing the rule of you have to let the referee spot it, which I mean, I watched the John Boy breakdown of the end of this game earlier today, and it is kind of funny that the ref was like 25 yards like behind the play, and the everybody has to wait for him to run all the way up there and spot the ball. So that's pretty wild. I mean,
that
makes sense.
Be a rule where they stop the clock because
right.
Let's be honest, these refs are not as good. Ed Hockley's not out there anymore, folks.
Well, the funny thing is that John Boy mentioned Joe West. Like, could you imagine if Joe West had to run like to make a call in baseball? Like, you'd still be waiting on the game to end. But yeah, I mean, I think that would be a good, like, I don't know if that would be, you know, just too of a knee jerk reaction, but that does make sense, because the reason why they have to wait for the referee is because literally you could just keep driving it down the field and just play everything in front of the refs, right? But it should be a situation where you stop the clock, though.
Yeah, they need to adopt the college rule. You get a
first down.
It stops the clock, because it stops the clock so the officials can get everything reset. That's what it does. And basically, this is a rule. I think it's a rule that should be adopted. I don't see anything wrong with it, because because you got a first down and the ref's too slow to run 25 yards, you're going to let the clock run.
Right. In a playoff game.
Because of that. In a playoff game. It's like, I'm sorry. The dude's 67 years old running after 25 yards, you know, because he can't keep up with these young athletes. Okay. Well, stop the, if it's the game's being held up because of the official, the game clock needs to be stopped.
Yeah, I agree with that. Also, Carter's in the chat saying the Cowboys had 15 or 14 penalties. And then also Mike McCarthy didn't go for it on fourth down multiple times. So that's also true. So Cowboys,
Frank Reich.
Now, if it was Frank Reich, yeah, they'd be going for it all the time. The nightcap was Steelers and Chiefs. It was wild because the Steelers got up on the TJ Watt fumble, and you were thinking, oh, hey, maybe the Steelers do have a shot. But then Patrick Mahomes became Patrick Mahomes. He goes 30 for 39, 404 yards, 5 touchdowns, and an interception in the Chiefs 42-21 win. Travis Kelce had 5 catches for 108 yards and a touchdown. Jerick McKinnon, hadn't heard that name in a while. He has 169 total yards. Or sorry, in the regular season, he had 169 yards, a touchdown on 25 touches in the regular season, and then the playoffs, 142 yards and a touchdown on 18 touches. So, having the game of his season in the playoffs, not a bad time to get him involved in the offense. And then, of course, yesterday, not a big fan of the Monday night playoff game, just from a podcast planning standpoint, but the Cardinals and Rams. The Rams win 34-11. Kyler Murray just looked lost in his first playoff game, you know, of his career. Matt Stafford, 13 for 17, 202 yards and 2 touchdowns and a rushing touchdown on a quarterback sneak. The Rams rushed the ball 38 times for 140 yards. So that was wild card weekend. You know, 14 teams entered. Now there are only 8. So biggest takeaway from wild card weekend, for me, I think it's the Bills have asserted themselves as a team to beat in the AFC. We talked about last week in our playoff preview that, hey, I mean, the AFC is anyone's game. You know, it could be you could make your case for the Titans. You could make your case for the Chiefs. Obviously, you could make your case for the Bills, for the Patriots, for the Bengals, for the Raiders, maybe a little bit more stretches on the Bengals, Raiders and Steelers. But still, like, you didn't feel like everyone had zero chance, because you could still basically could make the argument, well, I mean, remember what the Steelers did in Jerome Bettis last year. Yeah, I mean, even though that team was a lot younger and the defense was a lot better, you know, there wasn't really a team that you said, this is the team that's going to assert themselves and win the AFC. And I think the Bills really showed out and showed why they should be, you know, kind of the favorites to come out of the AFC this year. I mean, they're the best teams in terms of the best team in terms of yards allowed per game, 273, only defense to allow an average of less than 300 yards and points allowed per game. They've only allowed 17 points on average per game. They're also 7th in turnover margin, +8. Josh Allen had the best game that he's had all season in terms of passing touchdowns, passer rating, and QBR. And as far as the rest of the AFC goes, I mean, you talk about, you know, okay, well, did anyone else do anything to catch your eye? I mean, obviously the Titans were off, but the Titans have been the number one seed twice since 2000. Of course, 1999 is the last year that they went to the Super Bowl. They lost in the divisional round each time. Too many uncertainties, in my opinion, with no Derrick Henry, even though he's projected to be back. They had Henry for their the wins against the Chiefs and Bills, and since losing Henry to the Colts, the wins for the Titans have been the Rams, who that kicked off a terrible November for the LA Rams. They won against the Saints, Jaguars, 49ers, Dolphins, and Texans. So, like, you have the 49ers in there, you have the Rams in there, but really the teams that they beat over that stretch weren't necessarily world beaters in that stretch, and their losses came to the Texans, Pats, and Steelers. So, you know, there's a lot of question marks with the Tennessee Titans as far as being the one seed. Then you have the Bengals. Congrats on your first playoff win in my lifetime, but I don't have a lot of faith in them actually winning the AFC. And then as far as the Chiefs go, I mean, the Bills showed that they have an offense that can compete with the Chiefs offense. And the passing defense for the Bills is ranked first this season, and the Chiefs are ranked 27th against the pass. So I think the Bills have a defense that can not only contain Patrick Mahomes, but now this past weekend they showed that they have an offense that can keep up with the Chiefs offense. So I'm really encouraged from what I saw from the Buffalo Bills on Saturday night.
Yeah, I mean, the Bills, like you said, they do look like the team to beat right now in the AFC. Unfortunately, the matchup that we would love to see of them versus the Chiefs in the AFC championship is actually going to be a divisional round game. So unfortunately there, but you know what, some of the things that stood out to me were, I think the Rams now look like one of the better teams and a potential sleeper or a potential pick now to make a run at the Super Bowl. They looked complete. And that is something that we haven't seen for a while. You know, Matthew Stafford got that monkey off his back of getting his first career playoff win. OBJ looked like OBJ of old. And if that's the OBJ we're going to start seeing, hold on tight. That's going to be a very scary offense.
First pick in the Madden draft, not looking too bad now, is it, B. Scott?
No, not at all. You know, maybe it was. He just needed to get out of the toxic situation in Cleveland.
Yeah.
And maybe we're realizing he's not a toxic situation himself.
I think I saw what he had, like, through his time in Cleveland, he had 7 touchdowns, and in his short time with the Rams, he already has 4. So that's pretty wild. Yeah. And that's not counting last night.
Rumor has it Baker Mayfield just did not like targeting him.
Hmm. So, which you would think would be the antithesis of what you would want to do as the Brown quarterback. Let's not throw to our best receiver. Let me prove that I can win with, you know, David Njoku.
I think, yeah, that's a different topic.
Right.
But the Rams looked like a legitimate threat in the NFC. It's going to be interesting this next weekend to watch them against the Buccaneers. I think that one has the potential to be a shootout. And I also think it has a potential. I think the Rams have every bit of a chance to win that game and advance onto the NFC title game. Now, another thing that I really intrigues me, the Bengals. I mean, this is a team that's really coming on at the right time. I agree with you. I don't think they have a chance to win the AFC, but I think they have a legitimate shot to make it to the AFC championship game. And I wouldn't be the least bit surprised, because if there's one conference that seems to always have some random team, a lot of times in the AFC championship game. I mean, like I just said, the AFC. I mean, think about it. A couple of years ago, it was the Jacksonville Jaguars. I mean,
yeah,
seriously. And it was, wasn't it?
The Jaguars were ahead. It was Blake Bortles. It was Blake
Bortles. Yeah,
Bortles service,
and they were on the cusp of a Super Bowl berth. I mean, obviously they went into Tampa Bay and New England and had to beat Tom Brady and Bill Belichick. That's not an easy thing to do, but still, you know, the Titans made that run a couple of years ago to the AFC Championship game and kind of came out of nowhere as well. I mean, it just seems like there's always a time where, like, a team that you didn't expect to make the conference championship is there. And I could see that being the Bengals this year, to be honest. So I'm really, honestly, I'm more excited for the divisional round now than I was for the wild card weekend. I mean, I'll be honest, I watched probably about 10 minutes of live action. I mean, I watched all the highlights and, you know, everything, but it was just, I don't know, the weekend in itself, it was just too drawn out, way too drawn out. and way too hyped for a bunch of matchups that just weren't all that intriguing to begin with. Now, like I said, this weekend, yeah, I'm excited for this weekend. It's got some intrigue to it.
The Super Wild Card weekend is built for, like, I know that you could make the case for the Eagles too, but I think, like, if it were any other year, like if it were last year and the Steelers were seventh, I think you'd be like really intrigued to see Steelers and Chiefs, or even a couple of years ago. So there will be that occasional seventh team that is, you know, halfway decent, or a situation like, heck, next year, potentially. I mean, you could, in the NFC, you know, if the Seahawks are better, you could potentially have a situation where, hey, all three of the wild card teams are the teams that didn't win the NFC West, and the team that's seventh could be taking on the NFC West winner in the 2-7 game. So it's not the greatest, but yeah, a lot of the matchups ended up being kind of exactly what we thought they'd be, not super unpredictable. I mean, if there was a game that was up in the air for me, it was, we both picked the Raiders, I think, to beat the Bengals, and we were both wrong on that. But like, if there was a game that was like seriously, like I didn't know who to pick, it was the 49ers and Cowboys.
For me, it was definitely the Raiders and the Bengals, just because, you know, they were, both teams were kind of surprises,
right,
to me getting there. Obviously, true. The Raiders, they were like, wait a sec, we got in, and apparently the butt joke of the entire weekend was the Indianapolis Colts.
Yeah.
Like, people couldn't keep the Colts out of their mouths the entire weekend because of the big egg they laid. To allow the Raiders and the Steelers to both get into the playoffs.
Yeah. Cause I don't know if the weekend's like saved if the Colts are there, but I think Colts and Bengals would have been fun. I wouldn't have wanted to see any other matchup. I wouldn't have wanted to see Colts and Bills. I think the win that they got, that was like 45-15, where Jonathan Taylor scores 5 touchdowns, that's not going to happen again. I mean, maybe the Colts can win that one, but it's not going to be a triumphant, astounding, crazy victory. And then I definitely don't want them to have to play the Chiefs in the first round, because I don't really see the difference. I mean, I want the Colts to make the playoffs, but I don't see the difference in like, oh, hey, my team's season finished a week later than it would have. That's cool. There's no intrigue there. If they would have been the fifth seed, then I'm like, all right, cool. You beat the Bengals, who haven't won a playoff game. You know, I wasn't born yet the last time they won a playoff game, and I'm going to be 31 in a month. If they win that game, all right, cool. Then maybe they end up playing. I mean, I'm still not super excited to have to play the Chiefs, but I guess in this instance, they play the Titans. All right, cool. Maybe if we play the Titans, we can beat them. There's a real, I think, path for the Colts to do something in the postseason if they would have played the Bengals. If they would have played any other team, I don't think there would have been.
Well, think about it this way. If the Colts had made the playoffs, that means they were actually still playing hot football and, you know, not
whatever the last 2 weeks were.
they would have been playing like they did against the New England Patriots, and that, you know, it would have been intriguing, and it definitely would have garnered my attention a little bit more than the 10 minutes I tuned in.
Right. So the divisional round coming up this weekend in the AFC, it's going to be the Titans and the Bengals, and then the one seed and the four seed, and then it will be Bills and Chiefs, 2-3. In the NFC, it's going to be the Packers and 49ers, the 1-6, and then it's going to be Buccaneers and Rams, the 2-3. So we're going to play some hot or cold, and at the same time make our predictions. So we're going to say whether or not this is a hot or cold take. If you're new to the podcast, we have a segment called Hot or Cold, where we say a take and say whether or not it is hot or cold. And then we're also going to give our prediction once we're done, conversing about, the topic. So we'll go ahead and kick it off here. The Titans will make the AFC Championship game, even if Derrick Henry, who is projected to play, is not an impact player. For me, that is a cold take. Derrick Henry averaged 117 yards before he went down versus the Colts. The Bengals are fifth against the run this season. And since 2019, the Titans are 8-12, including 0-2 in the playoffs, when Henry has held below 100 yards. So if Derrick Henry is not running people over, they're not having a ton of success, which, I mean, seems obvious. The Bengals are 0-3 this season when allowing an 100-yard rusher. The Titans are 25th against the pass. The Bengals have the 7th best passing offense. So if Cincy's D can keep Henry in check, then I think they have the offense to get the job done. And you know what? What's funny is when I initially phrased this question, I was going to be like, I was going to say it was a hot take. So I was like, yeah, I mean, Henry, his first game back, he's probably not going to be an impact player, but he's going to be good enough to get the job done. And the Titans are going to win. And I don't really have a, I don't really have a ton of faith that the Bengals can pull the upset. But after like doing that little bit of research and seeing just, you know, how kind of middle of the road the Titans are, if Henry is not at the forefront of the game plan and isn't the guy that's, you know, dominating on the field, honestly, I'm going to go with the Bengals here. I think the Bengals can get the job done. You know, I think this is, we talked about the wins that the Titans have since, you know, Henry's gone down. I mean, I know they'll have Henry again, but their wins in this back half of the season, I mean, they're two most notable ones. I mean, you've got the over the 49ers, which the quarterback's Jimmy G. You have the win over the Rams when Stafford started kind of his downfall, although, I mean, he's, you know, a solid quarterback. I mean, I'd say during this stretch, Joe Burrow is the best quarterback they've played. And they've played other good quarterbacks too, but they've lost those quarterbacks. I just think that this Bengals, I feel a lot better with this Bengals team going in and seeing how bad the Titans are, defensively against the pass. I think that Cincinnati can get the job done. So I'm going with the Bengals.
The way this question is worded is tough for me because I think the Titans can make the AFC Championship game, even if Derrick Henry is not an impact player, but I don't think the Titans will.
That's the whole point. Because yes, they can. Anything can happen.
Well, the reason why I say they can is because even if Derrick Henry's out there early on, he's going to be more of a decoy, which is going to open things up for the passing game for the Titans. And let's be honest, the passing game is pretty legit for the Titans as well. But I don't think that has any staying power, because once the Bengals realize that he's just a decoy and he's really not performing all that well, they can clamp down, and the Bengals have the offense to go toe to toe with have the passing offense to go toe to toe with another team. And honestly, I think they have a better passing offense than the Titans. I mean, just because I trust Joe Burrow a little bit more right now than Ryan Tannehill. Also, the Titans are coming off a bye and, you know, got to shake. I mean, it's only 1 week, I know, but you kind of have to shake a little bit of rust off at that point. So, yeah, I'm going to say it's a cold take as well. And I'm picking the Bengals to make the AFC Championship. I mean, I said it earlier. I think they're one of those teams that's kind of surprising. And there's always that one surprise team, it seems like, in the AFC to make the run to the AFC Championship. And it's going to be the Bengals this year.
Question number two, the Bills will continue their offensive showcase versus Kansas City. Now I want to phrase this as also, I'm not saying they're not going to go 7-for-7 again. That's not going to happen, you know, in this game, but I do think, however, it is a hot take. Josh Allen, just went for 300 yards and 5 touchdowns against a New England pass defense that was ranked 2nd this season. The Chiefs defense is 27th against the pass. Allen put up 300 plus yards and 3 touchdowns and 38-20 win over Kansas City earlier this season. The Chiefs are 27th in defense in general. But if they get off to another slow start with like they did versus Pittsburgh, like I said, after the TJ Watt fumble recovery, I was like, okay, is there really a chance that Pittsburgh could go into Kansas City on wild card weekend and knock off the Chiefs? And the Chiefs were like, oh, wait, we actually have to show up for this game, too. And then they kicked it into gear. But I mean, not so like in that same vein, they probably won't, you know, underestimate the Bills like they kind of did the Steelers. But at the same time, if they do get off to a slow start, because we've seen them get off to slow starts in the postseason before, the Super Bowl, the game against the Texans, the game against the Titans even that year, because weren't the Titans up at halftime that year? Yeah. And I don't think, especially with as good as this Bills offense was last week and as good as the defense for the Bills has been all year, I don't think the the Chiefs could afford to have another slow start. So I'm going to go with the Bills as well. So it's going to be the Bills and the Bengals for me in the AFC game.
Yeah, this is a hot take for me as well. I mean, Buffalo is peaking at the right time. You know, their defense, for one, is really good. But Josh Allen is just playing at a different level right now than he has in previous seasons. And this is a very, very good team right now. And we're seeing what we all thought we could see out of them, and it's finally coming to fruition. So, yeah, I think they can continue this hot streak. And it's going to be tough for Kansas City because of the Bills' defense on top of it. And Kansas City's defense this year, like you said, 27th in defense, they're just not performing. And with a Bills team that can really punch you in the mouth, I mean, this is a team that's kind of got a little bit of everything. You know, they're not great at any one thing. They're just good at a lot of different things on offense. And that is really what you want in a team this time of year. So, and Josh Allen's just, he's not making mistakes right now. And that's the biggest key, not making mistakes. He's not forcing it. He's playing within the game and it's working for him. And that continues on. Bills, Bengals.
When I did my Bills video on TikTok, 3C Media on TikTok, you know, the random losses that the Bills had earlier this season to like the Steelers and the Jaguars, which just kind of had you scratching your head. I think at that point too, they had lost to the Titans. They lost the turnover battle, and you really hit the nail on the head, because if like the big key to that win over New England was the fact that Josh Allen didn't turn over the football. So, or just they didn't have any turnovers in general. So if he does that again, if they limit mistakes, then yeah, it's going to be really tough for Kansas City to really do anything with that. So moving on over to the NFC, the question is, so I don't like on hot or cold to just flat out be like, well, this team will win, because you could literally do that with every single thing. So I try to word it creatively each time. So this is basically what this question is, but just formatted in a way that it's not technically asking that question. So giving you a little peek behind the curtain there. The 49ers will continue to shake up the NFC, hot or cold. For me, I originally worded this as a, thinking, because it's tough when you write the questions, because you try to make sure you don't write it. I think I've said this before. You don't want to like write it to where it's going to be, you think it's going to be hot for you every time, or it's going to be cold for you every time. So you just try like, hey, well, you know, what do I, you know, do with this? So originally when I wrote this question out, I was like, I think this could be a hot take, because I really think with the way the 49ers played on Sunday, like they kind of reminded me of the way they looked a couple of years ago when they made the Super Bowl. As far as they played really good defense, they ran the ball, they did all that good stuff well that we know that they can do. So I originally was like, hey, why not? Let's get froggy. Let's pick the 49ers to beat the Packers. And then, you know, the Packers held, you know, I looked into the numbers a little bit. The Packers held the 49ers to 67 rushing yards in their 28 win earlier this season. It was funny because I had to remind myself that some of these teams that are playing this weekend actually played each other in the regular season too, so I had games to kind of jump off of. San Francisco is 0-4 this season when failing to rush for 100 yards as a team. They are 10-3 when rushing for over 100 yards. So if the Packers can control that running game, then they're going to be in good shape. The Packers are 11th against the run. The Cowboys were 16th. I think the Packers are better coached, not as mistake prone. Aaron Rodgers has only thrown 4 interceptions this season. And both defenses are solid in general. So, I mean, when you have that point to jump off of is, okay, both teams have good defenses. Both teams have offenses that can win in the postseason, but if I'm really comparing the two, I like the Packers offense. I like the Packers coaching staff. I like Aaron Rodgers more than I like, you know, Jimmy Garoppolo, more than I like, you know, the San Francisco offense to get it done. So ultimately I am going to pick the Packers. I think it's a cold take here.
Yeah, I agree. It's a cold take. I mean, the Packers or the 49ers, you know, they played a good game against the Cowboys, But the Cowboys just shot themselves in the foot over and over and over and over again. That's not going to happen this weekend with the Packers. I mean, we're talking Aaron Rodgers, who's most likely going to be named league MVP. We're talking about the number one seed in the NFC. They didn't get there. They didn't back their way into that, quite like the Cowboys kind of backed their way into the playoffs, it felt like. But it's going to be a much tougher battle. And like I said last week in the playoff preview, Aaron Rodgers just seems like he's playing with something to prove right now. And nothing's going to get in his way of proving that point. And unfortunately, the next thing to try to stop him or stand in his way is the San Francisco 49ers. Good luck. I hope it's a good game. But I'm going with the Packers again in this. I mean, I picked the Packers to win the Super Bowl. Do you think I'm going to back off of it now? My preseason Super Bowl
pick
lost, so I need to ride somewhere.
Yeah, I'm surprised it took us past the 1 hour mark for me to remember to mention this. But yes, last night, Monday night's game was the battle of B. Scott and I's preseason picks to win the NFC, and my team ended up being victorious. So I'll wear that as a badge of honor.
In the playoff preview, I did pick the Rams to win.
True. You picked the Rams, and you also were completely out on your postseason pick and you went with the Packers. So we'll see if they can keep it up. So speaking of Rams and Cardinals, let's go ahead. That is the final question.
Rams
the question,
and Buccaneers. This
Rams. Yes.
They eliminated the Cardinals.
Right. The question about the Rams and Cardinals was what I meant there, going on to the next question here. The Rams will exploit the Buccaneers secondary for the second time this season. So in the first meeting, Matthew Stafford threw for 343 yards, 4 touchdowns versus the Bucs on September 26th. That was the second highest mark this season in terms of yardage, and tied for the highest mark for Matthew Stafford in terms of touchdowns in a game. So that was at kind of the peak of Matthew Stafford. Started the season where we're like, oh yeah, where when I was the most confident in my Super Bowl pick that the Rams would win the NFC, that's when that game happened. But since that point in time, obviously Matthew Stafford only threw for 4 touchdowns one other time, only threw for over 343 yards one other time. The Buccaneers never allowed another quarterback to throw for over 300 yards or 4 touchdowns the rest of the season. Can you guess the quarterback, the only quarterback to throw 3 touchdowns versus the Buccaneers defense?
I can, because I can see it on the
but just humor me. Humor me.
Well, it's going to be a quarterback that could potentially be out of a job this offseason. We'll put it that way.
Yes, it is Carson.
If you have a guess, throw it in the chat.
Yes. Very quickly here, it is Carson Wentz, who was the only quarterback to throw for 3 touchdowns against the Buccaneers defense. And we saw what the Bucs defense did last postseason, the second time seeing Mahomes. And that's just kind of what I was going back to in my mind. Because I was like, first time, I mean, because we sat here, you know, last year and on our Super Bowl preview, and we were like, oh, come on. I mean, the Chiefs torched him last time out. I don't think the Buccaneers will have a chance here. And the second time seeing Mahomes, that Buccaneers defense really honed in, especially in the postseason. I just like what the Buccaneers have been able to do defensively. It seems like they turn it up to that extra notch when it gets into the postseason, especially defensively. So, but I think, I also mean, it's a cold take for me. And it's also from the standpoint of, I just, even if the Rams can win, I don't think the path to winning for the Rams is necessarily passing the ball, because they just showed, on Monday that they can run the football as well. And they look like you were mentioning earlier, the complete package. The Rams are 8-1 this season when rushing for over 100 yards. So if they dial up the run game again, I think they do have a chance to pull off the upset. I mean, the upset, it's the 2 and the 4, but still. Because a good running game not only keeps Tom Brady off the field, but it also limits Stafford's mistakes, which have been a big bugaboo of the Rams going down the stretch here. So I think if they can get the run game dialed up, then I think maybe the Rams can end up winning the game. But ultimately, I'm still not confident enough to pick against Tom Brady. You know, I picked against him pretty much all postseason last year, and look where I got us. So this year I'm like, you know what, Tom, I'll play your game. I'll start picking you, and hopefully they'll falter down the stretch. So, but yeah, I think I think they're going to end up winning. The Buccaneers are also our third against the run, whereas the Cardinals were 20th. So that also may be more of a game plan thing for the Rams than actually like, hey, they're going to start running the ball now. So I think the Rams can pull the upset, but ultimately I'm going with the Buccaneers. So Buccaneers and Packers in the rematch in the NFC Championship game for me.
I think this is a hot take. I feel like Matthew Stafford and Odell Beckham Jr. are clicking at the right time.
Odell was not with the Rams the first time against the Buccaneers too.
I feel like I said, I feel like the Rams are hitting their stride at the right time again. They figured it out. And for some reason, I don't have the same faith in the Buccaneers this year overall. They haven't looked the same. Now, granted, when you have Tom Brady, you just need to make the playoffs. It's kind of like, you know, in years past in the NBA with LeBron, he just needed to make the playoffs and then, you know, win a championship. But I don't know. There's just something off this year about the Buccaneers, and I wouldn't be surprised. And I'm picking the Rams to win this one, just because I feel like the Rams have right now are a little bit hotter and are just clicking better. I don't know. This is probably going to be one of the better games.
Yeah.
If I had to pick two games that I definitely can't miss, one from each conference, Bills Chiefs, obviously, and then Rams and Buccaneers on the NFC side. So yeah. This is one of my can't miss games.
Look, I'm hoping that you tune in. I'm hoping you're right, because look,
Super Bowl pick would still be
true, but also a Super Bowl or a championship weekend of 49ers Rams and a AFC championship of Bills Bengals would almost be perfect case scenario for me, because then besides the Bills being my Super Bowl pick, I'd have like no dog in the fight and I don't have to root against anybody. I don't really want to see the Titans because they're, you know, the divisional foe. And also, you know what? The Titans got, you know, adjusted a uniform that didn't need to be adjusted. Team white helmets all the way. The white helmets were better than the Navy helmets. At me, whatever you got to do. I do not like the adjustment that they made. So I will forever hold it against them. And then, obviously, great. The Patriots are out. And then, you know, 49ers. This year, I've not been normally the Packers, because when I grew up liking the Packers because of Brett Favre. And so they've kind of been my like NFC team. This year, I've not been a huge fan of the Packers. And then I'd like to see Tom Brady get knocked out by the Rams too. So look, that would be perfect case scenario for me if that's what the NFC Championship and AFC Championship look like.
But you picked the Packers to win.
Because I think that's what's going to happen.
Okay.
What would make me
very happy is if that didn't happen.
Yes. Well, because remember, in both scenarios, preseason, because for one, Rams or Packers are good for me either way, because Rams Bills was my preseason Super Bowl pick, and then I just backed off the Rams and picked the 49ers in the playoff preview. So either one of those scenarios works for me. So I'm just good either way. And plus, I picked the Bills both times. So
did you pick the 49ers in the playoff preview?
No. I picked the Packers in the playoff preview. I picked the Packers. Yeah.
Okay, yeah. That's what I thought you said. I picked the 49ers.
I didn't pick the 49ers at all. But yeah, in both scenarios, I picked the Bills to win the Super Bowl. So yeah. No matter who, you know, as long as the Bills make it out of the AFC, I'm good.
Yeah.
So we'll find that out.
It's gonna you be will. A good one.
So that'll do it for this week's edition of the Crash Course Podcast. We've previewed the divisional round. We recap Wild Card Weekend, talk some Pacers. Thank you guys all for being here. Remember, you can like us on Facebook, 3C Media. You can follow us on Twitter at 3C Media Sports. You can go to our YouTube channel, 3C Media, as well as 3C Media TikTok. You can come to our Twitch channel, twitch.tv/CraigCrash. That's where you can watch our live reportings every single week. We had Carter's in the chat today, Elle and Meg. Thank you guys all for being in the chat. We want you guys in here so we can interact with you guys. So we appreciate everybody who comes out. And then remember, you can listen to us every week on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, wherever podcasts can be heard. You can hear the Crash Course podcast. You can follow me at Crash Course FM on Twitter. B. Scott, where can they find you?
You can follow me on Twitter at Brandon_Scott87.
We'll be back next week to talk divisional round recap, as well as AFC and NFC championship previews, as well as some other topics as well. It's going to be a lot of fun. We hope to see you there. But until then, have a good week, everybody.